This program is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. For more shows like this, visit our website at cosmicpotato.com.
Fifty years ago, the world was introduced to the phenomenon that was Star Trek. Popular culture was changed forever, and eventually it became 6 television series and 13 motion pictures. People from all walks of life have been affected by it. Their lives have been affected by the lessons and the philosophies that they took away from it. This is the story of those fans. Interviews with individuals who love Star Trek and believe that their lives are better because of it. This is their prime direction. Hey, everybody, and welcome to The Prime Direction, the Star Trek fandom podcast. My name is Sean Ray, and my guest today is a fellow Alabamian that I had the pleasure of meeting last summer at Magic City Con. Mark Adam Miller is the fleet captain of the USS Hephaestus. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
That is correct, Hephaestus.
Okay, the Hephaestus. That's the Birmingham area chapter of Starfleet, the International Star Trek Fan Association, which is a nonprofit organization that takes part in charitable fundraising activities and also bringing people together through their love of Star Trek. So, Mark Adam, welcome to the Prime Direction.
Thank you for having me, Sean.
No problem. I'm going to talk to you about your organization in a few minutes, but before I get into that, I wanted to go back to the beginning of your fandom. So, are you from Birmingham originally?
No, I am actually Ohio native. From a little town that's north of Dayton, the home of the Wright brothers, and south of Wapakoneta, a home of Neil Armstrong.
Okay. What was your surroundings in your life like as you were growing up?
I was pretty much in a rural area, farmland, and that type. It's now built up. It's the farmland's almost gone. It's taken over by a lot of housing development that takes care for the Air Force base that's over in Fairborn. Mm-hmm. There's Wright-Patterson Air Force Base that's there. And but it was just a rural area, farmland stuff. My grandparents owned a farm and that type of thing. And one building schoolhouse. I didn't go, you know, like a lot of schools now are, you have an elementary school, a middle school, and a high school. All ours was in one building.
Yeah.
So it still is, believe it or not. They're just now beginning to, they bought some farmland next to the old school building, and they are building a high school. So there will now be a 2-building system.
Okay.
Actually 3 generations of Miller have graduated from Bethel. My grandfather, my father, and of course me. So,
oh, that's
3
cool.
Generations, yeah. From that. So pretty much there.
Well, tell me about your earliest memory of Star Trek.
Earliest memory I have is fighting with my brother to watch it at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. He wanted to watch Gilligan's Island, which is a half an hour program.
Right.
And of course I wanted to watch Star Trek, and we would fight. It finally came down to, I got a Star Trek concordance, and, through an agreement, I had to go through the concordance and read through all the different episodes.
Yeah.
List the episodes that I had not seen, and we'd scour the TV guide and see which days I could watch. And it pretty much came down to I watched Star Trek 2 days a week, and Johnny was able to watch Gilligan's Island the other 3 days.
So you weren't allowed to rewatch any episodes. Was he allowed to rewatch Gilligan's Island?
Well, I forget. I can't remember if that, because it's been so long. I don't remember how often the Gilligan's Island would repeat.
Yeah.
was mostly the colored episodes. The black, it was so hard to see the black and whites, because once the colored televisions, the television stations really didn't want to show the black and white episodes.
Yeah.
I think it was like 74 or 75 they started showing the black and white episodes again, because Disney had gotten a syndication on the old Mickey Mouse Club, which was in black and white, and everybody wanted to see that.
Yeah.
And so with them doing that, then they started showing the Gilligan's Island black and white and Leave It to Beaver.
Oh, okay.
I remember seeing some of those.
What was it about Star Trek that connected with you?
Most of it was just the idea of exploring space. I was born in 1964, so by 69 we had gone into space. We landed the moon in 69. And so I was avid into space, and was a friend had connections at the Johnson Space Center, and for my birthday and Christmas, she'd always give me this envelope that had all these different NASA things in it, pictures and posters and different things that I had hanged up on my wall. And Star Trek was the only thing that was on that dealt with space a lot on TV.
Yeah.
That I could see on a regular basis. Because Buck Rogers didn't, with Gil Gerard, didn't come until, I think, 79. There was Space 1999, and there was Lost in Space. But Lost in Space I didn't care for. I loved the robot, but Dr. Smith, I just couldn't stand Dr. Smith.
Yeah.
I felt like, okay, you cause enough problems, we're just going to leave you on this planet and take off.
Right.
Which my point. So at Star Trek just made the thing. And I think I sort of identified with the Spock character because I was kind of the strange kid in school, the nerd, constantly reading science fiction. And not like I never liked sports. Was not something I was into, because I couldn't throw a ball right, and so I never got into sports. Star Trek was a thing for me, and that's where I went.
Yeah, yeah, and that's something that I've noticed at doing this show. Almost everybody that I talk to that grew up watching the original series, they all say that they connected with Spock more than they did any other character. And I guess it's got something to do with the fact that, you know, we were more inclined to not be into sports. We were more into science fiction, that kind of thing. So, of course, the Kirk character being the suave, you know, swashbuckling kind of guy, you know, wouldn't connect with us as much as Spock was. But I've noticed that I hear that more and more. Guys that watched the original series as their first Star Trek series connected more with Spock than they did than they did Kirk. But did you consider yourself a rabid fan from the very beginning?
Yes, I consider myself a Trekkie from the get-go. I did everything Trekkie. I had the TMI models of the phaser and the tricorder communicator, and I figured out a way to strap them on. And me and a friend of mine, we had a woods in the back, and we'd go around exploring, killing Klingons and fighting the Romulans and jumping across this little creek to get away from the Gorns and stuff like that.
Did you have a lot of Star Trek toys?
I pretty much the first one we were pretty sure it was my 7th or 8th birthday. I had the Star Trek Enterprise model. Mm-hmm. At my birthday, and I remember they called it the Star Trek pistol, but it never looked like a phaser. It was a brownish gold looking thing that shot these little colored neon discs, neon colored discs. You could fill it up with about 20 of them, and you could fire about 20 of them off. Of course, you know, mom and dad would say, "Oh, don't point that at somebody's eye. You'll take somebody's eye out." And I'm like, "Point it doesn't. You know, I could shoot myself with a thing, and it didn't hurt."
Right? Yeah. That's something that I've talked about with guys before, is that Star Trek, I mean, they had toys, but it wasn't like Star Wars. Star Wars had toys, you know, there was tons of stuff.
Right. Yeah.
And Star Trek had some models, and a lot of times they would just take regular toys and they'd slap Star Trek on the side of it and call it a Star Trek toy. There were some Mego figures and things like that, but it wasn't anything like what Star Wars had. Yeah. So I guess more closer to now, more recently, they've started making more and more toys as it got popular in the 90s with the Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and things like that.
There was some, I'm trying to remember when the 6-inch figure, because see, G.I. Joe used to be a 12-inch figure. I'm taking off on a slide there. But G.I. Joe was a 12-inch figure. But then there was in the 70s, because of petroleum, the petroleum problem, plastic was not as hard. So G.I. Joe was shrunk to 6 inches.
Yeah.
And when they were shrunk to 6 inches, there was a set of Star Trek figures that came out. And I forget who they were by. You could buy them. And then there was it was this material which there was cardboard, and then it was layered with vinyl or plastic over it. It was a bridge scene that you could put. It was a box that you opened up, and it made the bridge. And one side had a little thing that if you spin it just a certain way, it would look like the transporter, and the figure would disappear. And then there was a little door on the other side. You open it, and then you could pull the figure out. When you put the figure back in that little door and spin it again and hit the button, and then it looked like he would reappear on the transporter pad.
That sounds like the Mego transporter.
Yeah, and there was that, which I want to say 74, 75. I'd have to look through the collection books to see exactly. But I remember seeing – and, of course, that was before the movie, which was 79. So we're looking probably, I'm thinking around 74, 76, because that's when when we had those strange gas prices and all the strange stuff that you had to do. Like sometimes if your license plate was odd, you go on the odd days. And if your license plate was even, you go on the even days and stuff like that. So.
Well, did you have a lot of friends in school that were into Star Trek? Or, I mean, were there people for you to talk to about it? Or did you have to kind of keep it on the down low?
There was three guys that I ran around with in school. One was into the monster stuff, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th and all that. And he was into monsters and trying to figure out how to do the latex stuff and that type of thing. Then the other two were... one read a lot of science fiction like I did, but was more, he had a sports edge to him. And then the other was just one of your good old boy farm boys who, he couldn't do much. He normally had to go out and work on the farm for a while.
Yeah.
At the time if he could go, it was on a rare basis that he could go.
After the original series went away, did you move on thinking that Star Trek was just a thing of the past, or did you just continue on with your fandom the way it was?
I collected a Star Trek magazine called Starlog, which sort of founded from Star Trek. It started out as Star Trek, but went into a lot of the fantasy. I read a lot of the Star Trek books. I had all the whole James Blish collection, which was rewrites of all the scripts. I had all the Alan Dean Foster, which was the animated series, and the stuff out there. Star Wars came along, which kept my fuel, but I still was a Star Trek, even though I did like Star Wars. And, of course, Star Wars then is what caused Paramount to then finally make the motion picture in 79. So it didn't die off for me, no. I was a Star Trek through and through. And, you know, collected all the books as best I could and was always looking for, okay, what's the next book? What's coming out and that type of thing.
Yeah. Well, the movie came out in 1979. How old were you in 1979?
I would have been 15 at that time.
Okay. So were you really excited that movie was coming out?
Oh, yeah. That was, I think I went to see it five times that year.
Okay, cool.
Because that was, you know, you could see it was, they were back. They were, weren't sure. We were hoping at the time that, okay, they're going to turn this in back into the TV series, which never happened.
Yeah. Phase two. Yeah.
Yeah, phase two. Well, the phase two grew into that. And we thought that because the phase, because of all the stuff that was leaking about phase two, we thought, oh, this is them just trying to. Because Buck Rogers was done that same way. They created a movie, Battlestar Galactica, also had a two-hour movie that they showed in theater. So we thought, okay, this is the stepping point, too. Mm-hmm. But, of course, it didn't materialize until 1987 with Star Trek The Next Generation.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, but we still had the movie, you know, like every two or three years. 86, 84, and 82, I think, were the 3, 4, and 82, 84, and 86 were the 2, 3, and 4.
How did you feel about that movie after you saw it? I hear a lot of people that were disappointed in it, and I hear a lot of people that loved it.
Because it was Star Trek, I was really stoked. I didn't care for the uniform because they were so bland, they were so space pajama-y that that's not what it is. But Kirk was there, Spock was there, Spock was doing his stuff. They really had some good stuff for DeForest Kelly to do as Dr. McCoy and Uhura. So you got to see everybody, but there was just a strain. It was a little bit off, but it like, hey, the Enterprise looked great.
Yeah.
And that was our, you know, and see, that's one thing that sometimes with Star Trek, the Enterprise is a character. And people sometimes forget that. And because of the way the Enterprise looked and the way they used the special effects, it's like, oh, this is really, really good special effects type of thing. It just needed a little better story to work a little better. They didn't. They had taken a TV episode and sort of expanded it out to 2 hours.
Yeah.
And that's what they should. They should have really looked and tried to get a good story, which I think when they came back with Wrath of Khan, they really worked at it. And that's why Wrath of Khan is considered, you know, the hallmark of the Star Trek movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, The Next Generation started in 1987. How excited were you that that was happening?
Oh, I was over the moon. I thought, oh, finally, we're gonna have Star Trek series again. We're gonna have something to think about because they're gonna probably bring in some good ideologies to think about. How are we looking at the future? That's one of the things that with Star Trek you look for is because they did have a social commentary, and that is one thing of science fiction. Science fiction is a social commentary on how are we going to get to the future if we're going to continue fighting and killing each other. That's just the way things are. Mm-hmm. And Star Trek did that. But Star Trek did also well in doing entertainment. That's why they also have their comedy episodes like Trouble with Tribbles. And, I forgot the gangster one.
I know what you're talking
about. Piece of the action.
Yeah.
So, and you get, but then Star Trek came, Star Trek Next Generation comes along. They do have the social commentary in several things, but they then also made sure they had the comedy, like they had in their gangster one, which is the holodeck one. And of course, for some reason, I can't think of it. It's the one where Captain Kirk or Captain Picard gets stuck on the holodeck. As a Dixon Hill character.
Yeah, yeah.
In the noir. To me,
I used to know the title to every episode. And in recent years, I've found that I can't remember them anymore. So it's the one with that guy that did that thing. Yeah.
I still have a pretty good handle on this original 79. But when you get into the Next Generation, I start to lose it. I can remember Data's day is the wedding of Keiko and O'Brien, and mm-hmm. Data being his best man. The best of both worlds, being the one with the Borg and stuff like that. Yeah, I can pull those ones, but there's other ones that just I have to go to the computer or my phone and pull them up.
Right.
To see, okay, which one is this?
Which Star Trek series is your series?
Oh gosh, that's a hard one to say. Because the thing is, you're asking me
to pick one of your children.
pick one of the children. Because Star Trek, because of the way they've written it, you are actually each series and all the movies are different facets of the same object. And you're just having to look at it. And when you're looking at it, you're just looking at one side of that object when you're doing it. When you look at Star Trek, the original series, or TOS, are just looking at, like, side one. But then if you start walking to the right, you get going into the Next Generation, go a little more to the right, you go DS9, and then Voyager. And then if you head over top, you get Enterprise. And then opposite the Enterprise are the movies. But
right, yeah.
Of course, I've run out of sides on a six-sided cube, but, you know, with the movies, you get a little more. It's more of a 20-sided dice type of thing. But the thing is, it's a little hard. I can tell you that Enterprise is the one I'm disappointed in. They had a lot of potential there, and they lost it because they were trying to make the fan base bigger, and so they were depending on the fans just to tune in, and so they were trying to write for other people and not the fans, and so in a sense they sort of lost their way, and that's why we only get four seasons of Enterprise.
Well, yeah, a lot of that is also Star Trek. You know, the Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, they were first run syndication shows, and when you got into Voyager and Enterprise, They were both back on a network, and with Enterprise, you had the network wanting to get their hands in there and have their say in what was going on too, and affected things in not a positive way.
Well, the thing is, they were depending on Enterprise to be their NCIS or CSI of their network. I can't think what. In a mall, it's called the Anchor Store. In television, I forget what they call it. It's their main thing that's going to keep them on the air,
right?
So they can do all their other stuff. And of course, Paramount, when they did that, it was sort of like, okay, you are trying to do something that already there with cable. By that time, a lot of people had already switched over to cable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the same. I think about 65% of the nation was considered to be on cable by that time, and so they were trying to carve out another niche. And of course, what they didn't realize is they really needed to come out and find their own studio in each market, and that was the hard part of them finding, because there was already an ABC, a CBS, NBC, and a Fox Networks in that area, and they were having it most of the time. Either they were on Fox or NBC on the second tier.
Yeah,
and they were trying their best not to be a second tier network. They wanted to be compete against the four, and that's just to do that they needed the cities to set up another station for them, and they didn't do that, and that's the sad part. And they were depending on the programming to move them along, and that didn't work.
Yeah. Sorry to say. Well, how do you feel about the movies? Are you happy to have? I'm talking and the movies. I'm talking about the new movies. Are you happy to have them, or do you wish they just leave it alone?
So you're talking about the Kelvin.
Yeah. Exactly. Right.
For some of your listeners, if you may not be in, the movies that J.J. Abrams has started is now called the Kelvin Universe, based on the ship that was destroyed in the 2009 Star Trek movie.
Right.
That's why it's called the Kelvin Universe. In that, I liked what J.J. Abrams did in most of the movie, except for his flares. His light flares gets a little annoying. Someone needs to really tell him to, it's nice time, but not every scene.
Right.
And there was some good stuff in the first movie that made sense. The second movie, as far as I'm concerned, that one probably needs to be in trash, because all it is a rehash of Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
just switching of characters. Number three, I really liked it. I think the problem with it that came out was because the fan base was up in arms because of certain things Paramount was doing against the Axanar. And that's a whole different discussion. But that I think that's what hurt it, is that fans didn't know how to feel because they were feeling slightly betrayed because of what was happening with Axanar.
Yeah, I can see that.
And so therefore the fan base didn't really come out. Even though I think Simon Pegg, who is a real good Star Trek fan, versus J.J. Abrams, who is a Star Wars fan,
yeah,
did his best to work the stuff, because there is a lot of stuff in there that if you're a mega fan of Star Trek, then you're going, oh yeah, I remember that's, they're talking about this, they're talking about that, and there's things left and right about that. And I think they did a very good job in trying to give a memorial to Leonard Nimoy with his death.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the untimely death of Yeltsin also, I think, caused some problems with film too, because people were like, do I really want to see this movie? That, because Yeltsin is gone, and it's going to just remind me that a person who did a real good job of taking on the reins of Chekhov is now gone.
Yeah.
They won't be able to. It would be really hard to recast him with another Chekhov.
I would hope that they wouldn't even try. I would.
That's what I'm really hoping that they don't. If they do, this is just what they would do is somehow have him go into something, have a transporter, have him call up and say, "Beam me up." And when he beams up, they transport up, and Walter Koenig is standing there.
Yeah.
And that's what that, and you know, like somehow the transporter has aged him to an older person and something to that extent. If they wanted to do that, that's what I would do, so that we're not really going on that ground of saying, well, Yeltsin can be replaced, because he can't.
They kind of did that exact storyline, and there was a fan project called. I think it was called Star Trek New Voyages or Star Trek Phase 2. It was a fan production that was on YouTube a while back. And they had an episode where something happened to Chekhov and he started rapidly aging. And Walter Koenig was a guest star in that episode, and he played the older version of Chekhov.
Yeah.
So.
Now that you say that, man, maybe that it's been a while since I've watched those productions, because I would have to go back about 3 years since those productions were on, because haven't watched those when they came out. I'm not sure, because that production team did very well in what they did, but it's hard because they were doing it on they had other jobs, and so it was interesting how they would get some of this stuff out.
Right. Well, so as Star Trek fans, we're all constantly exposed to little tidbits of philosophy, life lessons, and things of that nature. So what do you think that Star Trek did for you that made your life better?
It really cemented for me that I can't judge other people because I don't know what their life is like. I need to understand that they have a place in this world, and allowing them to do the way they see things as they need to.
Mm-hmm.
And of course it's the philosophy is called infinite diversity and infinite combinations, or IDIC, as it's called in Star Trek, which is supposedly the Vulcan philosophy. Many things can be done, and they can be done in many different combinations. And it makes me a little better in accepting my fellow man, or fellow human, in what I in everything I do, and am a little easier to, like, not to jump when I feel offense against somebody because they say something like, going, why would you say something that to me like that? And realize that, hey, they don't know, they may not know me, they may not know my buttons, and I shouldn't let go off the handle because of something they say or and that type of thing. And be very careful in what I say because I don't know what people experiences do. For the longest time, I worked in retail. I worked 10 years in a bookstore. And having to read people on how their philosophies and what they like to read, and be able to, they would say, well, I've read this and I don't know where else to go. And having to be, okay, your thinking is along this line. Maybe you want to look at this author, or you maybe want to look at this line of thinking. And then sometimes thinking, okay, you're out of my depth, but I do know that my fellow coworker knows this. Let me go get them, see if they're not busy, and see if they can give you some suggestions,
right,
type of thing. And Star Trek is one thing that showed me that. By growing up in the North, I didn't see as much racism. And, you know, I thought people were people, and that's because of Star Trek. You know, Star Trek had a black female on the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw her as a human being, not as someone of color.
Right.
And so for, you know, some of the stuff that I would just goes, some of the racism stuff just goes over my head because it's like, you know, I don't think in that form because of what Star Trek made me how to accept people as who they are.
Well, tell me a little bit about the USS Hephaestus. How did you get started with the Starfleet organization?
Well, I always knew there was a Starfleet organization, but the Dayton chapter was not in a place where I could actually connect with them very well, and it was always hard. And of course, that was before internet. Once I came down here, I ran into some people that said, "Oh, there is a Star Trek club. They meet at Kingdom Comics. You should try to come in sometime." And so I started trying to go, and I just was able to start planning to meet with them on, because at the time they had a business meeting Monday nights at Kingdom Comics, and would be able to go in there, pick out my comic books and be with the meeting, and then started working with her. They had a social that happened two Saturdays after that meeting, and started getting involved and with them that way, and found some good friends that like to do Star Trek and like to play games. Like, you know, I like to play card games, board games and stuff like that, and this group does that too. And fell in with them doing this type of thing. And sooner or later, they realized, hey, we need a new leader. So looks like you're not doing anything. So they decided, hey, let's see what you can do as leader. And they promoted me to the president position, which we call commanding officer.
Right.
And I've been doing that for 5 or 6 years now. I guess it'll be probably 6 years this July, because I took over in 2011, I believe.
Yeah. Well, Star Trek hasn't been in a regular series run for over a decade. So do you feel like something's been missing from your life because of that, or are the reruns enough for you?
Well, the thing is, on net, you can watch any of the Star Treks on Netflix right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't miss it much. We've had the movies. Yeah, it would be nice to have something on television again where you're waiting each week to see a new episode. Also, I think there's a lot of things that Star Trek could make some decent episodes on social commentary that we need now because of where we're at. Because I think we are at a turning point in our society because we have gotten to a certain point about certain things, and we just need to get over that one last hump that I just think we have this one little hump that we're, okay, how are we going to deal with this? And I think Star Trek could actually make some good episodes showing that, okay, this is what you guys have got to think about.
Yeah.
And that Star Trek does is, okay, let's look at it from a different direction.
Well, we've got Star Trek Discovery coming hopefully this fall. Are you looking forward to that?
I wish I was. I really wish I was. The problem I have with that is one of the leading board members, or I don't know if he's a CEO. He's one of the movers and shakers of Paramount. And he actually came out and said, we're doing this to fortify our CBS All Access because Star Trek does so well on Netflix. We think we can make Star Trek bring in the money for us. And I'm like going, okay, if you're doing Star Trek just to get a paycheck, then it's going to fail. Star Trek only makes it when it is doing good stories and are moving thought forward and entertainment. Star Trek is twofold. It does make someone think, but it makes someone think in an entertaining way. And that's, you've got to be level. And that's why there's good episodes of Star Trek and bad. And the bad episodes are either because of they tried to entertain too much, or they pushed the agenda too much, the thinking part too much, that the entertainment was lost. And that's but if they're thinking just to make money on it, the fans aren't going to be, the fans have deep pockets and we'll gladly give you the money if you bring us a good product. And from a couple things he said, to me, they are looking to this for money, which if I understand people, these companies need to make money. I understand that. But like anything, if you want to make money, you got to have a good product. And if you don't have a good product, then you're not going to make the money.
Well, hopefully that was just one of the guys that signs the checks and not one of the guys that actually writes the episodes and has his hands really, in the mix.
It sounds like they've got some good actors to pull through. There are some people who worked on Deep Space Nine that are really good people that pulled on some of the best Deep Space Nine. And if they listen to these people, they should be fine. But if they try to expand it without trying to keep the fans, then they're going to lose it. Because my opinion, if you want to make Star Trek great, get us fans involved and keep us entertained. Now, fans can be a little fickle. I can understand that. But making sure we tune in, because we're the ones that's going to be bringing everybody in. We're going to say, hey, did you see this episode? We're going to be grabbing people. Oh, you need to sign in and look at this episode. This episode, this was an excellent episode. Because, most times if you run into a person, if a Star Trek person runs into somebody and someone starts talking about them, the Star Trek person at one point or another will say, hey, do you ever see the episode of Star Trek that they went to this planet and did this? That's the reason that you need to do that. And they'll talk about this episode and give you a life lesson from it. And I've seen people, and they're like, I never realized that. And they'll go see, you were right. That was a really good Star Trek. And the thing is, you get a convert.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, that's pretty much all I've got. Do you have a website where people can contact you?
We have a Facebook page. It's called u.s.s.hephaestus, HEPHAESTUS. And it's on Facebook. We put up when our socials are. We have two things a month. Our social is the second Saturday of every month. And then the fourth Thursday of every month is Exploring Trek, which is done at Kingdom Comics over in Vestavia. Can I say that on your podcast?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Sometimes people get a little antsy about it. But we're at Kingdom Comics the fourth Thursday of every month, except for November and December, but that's because of Thanksgiving and Christmas. But fourth Thursday,
right,
10 months, and we discuss Star Trek upside down, right side up, left, right, every which we tear apart a episode and pull everything we can out of that episode, Exploring Trek. That's the best way to meet us, is coming to Exploring Trek. And we also have snacks and pop normally for there. So that's you get a little food if you come to that.
Well, And for people that are listening that are not in the Birmingham area, is there a place that you know of where they can go to find out if there's a chapter near them?
Yes.
Or how they can even start a chapter for themselves?
They can do that very easily. All they have to do is go to www.sfi.org. And SFI stands for Starfleet International.
Okay.
And they can go on there, and there's ways to find out what is in your state and what may be near you. And they will then take you to either their Facebook site, or they will take you to their website, and they'll that ship's website, and you'll be able to plug in with them. If you have trouble with any of that, they can always contact me on the Facebook site and say, hey, I'm having trouble trying to find a chapter. They can tell me what state they are in and where they're at, and I can look to see where it is. And if they don't have a chapter, I can get a chapter that's nearby that can start them building up a thing, because we help other chapters build their own chapters in states. We call it our shuttle program.
All right. Well, thanks for being here, Mark Adam. I appreciate it.
John, anytime.
The Prime Direction is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. It can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and of course on our website at cosmicpotato.com. Please be sure to leave us a review wherever you find the show. That will go a long way toward helping other people find the podcast. Every fan has a story. If you would like to come on the show and tell me the story of your Star Trek fandom, send me an email at mail@cosmicpotato.com. Remember, there are a lot of people that want to be on the show, so please be patient, and I'll write back to you as soon as possible. Thank you for listening to the show. Be sure to look for more episodes as I continue to bring you more stories of Star Trek fans and their prime direction.